Family Football Podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFillon.
Hello.
Well, what a week it's been. As we record this right now, the Champions League quarterfinals are in full swing, aren't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
Bayern were a goal up last time I checked.
Yeah, and Barcelona were a goal down.
Torres scored and sent off.
Yes. So we're missing some good football.
We are indeed missing some good football while this goes on. Yeah, Barcelona are a goal down, though, eh? I mean, if you were to ask me a week ago which team you think running away with their domestic league would have their wheels fall off so spectacularly, I would have gone for Leicester rather than Barcelona. but hey, you never know.
That's not happened.
No, that hasn't happened at all.
No.
Yeah.
And for all we know, by the time listeners are listening to this, Barcelona may have won 5-1.
They probably do. They do that sort of thing, don't they?
That's the kind of thing they do.
They like that.
Yeah. Just a lot. That's good entertainment, though, isn't it?
It is.
It gets people back watching more, doesn't it?
It does. We've got horrifically one-sided competitions. Yeah.
They all love that.
They love that in Spain.
it's the Bayern effect, isn't it? Last week was a bit weird, wasn't it? Because usually Easter is quite a sort of busy time for football. You know, you get there, you've got a couple of matches. Well, always used to be, didn't it?
Used to be
make or break time, didn't it, for a lot of the promotion and relegation battles.
Mm.
But this year it was a international break.
Yeah, early Easter.
Yeah.
Which,
I don't know, it was a bit of a bust, really, wasn't it?
Didn't feel right, did it?
Yeah, it didn't feel like right at all, did
Can't
it?
Hand on my heart, say I watched that much of the international football.
Watched a bit, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, do they?
Yeah.
They're doing their best with friendlies, and of course we have the Nations League coming up quite soon.
Yes.
When does that start?
2018. Ways off. That's the attempt to try and reinvigorate the friendlies, but it is difficult. They are low. Low intensity matches.
Mm. Mm. But this week we're going to be talking about international, but with special focus on the England side.
Yes.
So for international viewers, this will be more a case of helping you see what England will be like in the summer, because, you know, from our perspective, we're not going to be talking about Wales or Northern Ireland because, you know, we're English and we don't want to be patronising.
The podcast is about England.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Mm. If we knew anything about Wales and Northern Ireland, maybe we'd talk about
them. We know they're lovely places.
We do know they are lovely places. Terrific places.
I used to live in Northern Ireland.
Yes, you did, didn't you?
Mm, Portrush. Beautiful.
Yeah. I visited there. Mm. I didn't live there.
No.
Yeah.
I have family there.
Really? You two should know a bit more about Northern Ireland.
Yes,
really,
you're right, we should.
Mm. I'm going for a drink with a Northern Irish guy on Thursday. I'll take some notes.
Yeah. Hands across the Irish Sea there. Mm. Look at that. So.
Indeed.
England played two friendly matches last week, one against the world champions, Germany, and won.
Yeah.
And then they played a team that didn't even qualify for the Euros and lost.
That's very English.
Yes. So, well, Terry, what did we learn last week?
Not much. On the fact that well, about England, not a lot.
Right.
About Germany, that they are having problems. And that, I think that's generally understood, that they're having some transition issues.
Mm.
And about Holland, that they probably really should have qualified for the Euro 2016. But about England, it's difficult to really gauge anything. I think we got a draw, massive encouragement from the Germany result.
Mm.
Yeah,
mm,
big encouragement. Yeah. To look at the team now, when I watch England, I look at a good, relatively young, relatively hungry team of good professional footballers.
Mm.
And it's been a while since I think I've felt well-disposed and affectionate towards an England side. I support England, and I'm English, but I usually hate them as well, just hate them. Mm. But I can't, so far, it's probably because they're all so young, still at the right end of their careers, they haven't done enough to annoy me, you know, I don't get worked up about it.
I must admit, I feel the same way. And this is despite the fact that half of them seem to be Tottenham players now.
Indeed.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting, specifically the Germany game, because it just did feel like I know it's only one game and we shouldn't get carried away, but it did feel like I'm going to get carried away. It was great to beat Germany, of course, but it was good to see young players getting a chance and doing really well.
Mm.
And kind of moving on from the old guard, really.
Yeah.
And we'll mention Rooney, no doubt. He wasn't there, and I think that made it even more interesting.
Yes, it was because I think that there is a feeling of security about having Rooney in the squad, Rooney in the side, which I think that perhaps is not a reflection of his current form. And when I say current, and he's in fairness, his very recent form as well. I think England are potentially fine without Rooney. But I do think that, they may, maybe perhaps need to convince themselves of that more than anything else.
Yeah, so I agree.
That was an important step.
Yeah, it would be a big thing for him to leave him behind, though, wouldn't it?
I'd be really surprised. I mean, he is the captain.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised. I think there's an argument for leaving him behind.
Yeah, but if he goes, he plays.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I think in an ideal world, what would happen is that he'd come.
Yeah.
And then he would play off the bench as a, hopefully an impact sub.
As a bench captain.
I appreciate that that's not a very satisfactory
situation.
And it's not likely to happen. I mean, I suspect that he will play.
Mm.
I certainly, he'll when he's fit, he'll line up against Turkey in the friendly game on the 22nd of May, assuming that he's fit as captain. And then we'll see how we'll just have to see how things go. But if it becomes patently obvious that England are playing better with him out of the team than in, then decisions and tough decisions will have to be made. And Roy Hodgson is the guy who's going to have to make them. And I guess then we then question, you know, Roy Hodgson and his own personal loyalty to Rooney, and to what extent that loyalty is personal, and to what extent it's professional. How much does he genuinely think?
Who's your preferred strike force for England at the moment, yeah?
I think Harry Kane is on fire. I know you don't want to hear that.
Unless he's literally on fire.
That would be awful.
Well, it would be. That would be terrible for him. But yeah, he's
breaking
playing,
news though.
He's playing really well, and he's doing it consistently, and he's doing it at a very high level. I'd play him up front as a first choice striker.
Just one man?
Well, I don't know. Vardy's doing pretty well.
Would you have two up front or one up front?
Since I've spent so much time in this pod, I'm more of a lone striker kind of guy these days.
4-3-2-1 man, eh?
Yeah.
I'm 4-4-2 is making a bit of a comeback.
Retro.
I think that 4-4-2 works quite nicely with Hodgson teams because he does like his two banks of four. And I do think that 4-4-2 can quite work well with a high press as well when you're off the ball. So I think that might work. I quite like to see definitely Kane.
Yes.
And I would like to see Welbeck because I think that he's just a cracking England striker. And
he's full of life, isn't he?
Yeah. But I mean, you've got Welbeck, you've got Kane, you've got Sturridge, and you've got potentially Vardy, assuming he's not absolutely spent by the time the Euros comes along. I mean, he's having the season of his life, and you have to ask: at what point is he going to start to just, you know, if not physically, then just, you know, emotionally, mentally, just break down and spend the rest of the summer just sleeping? Because I mean, he will be exhausted by the end of the season that he's had. An amazing season, he's going to be absolutely exhausted. So
it's got to come down eventually.
I mean, I'd certainly wouldn't put Rooney above any of those players.
Not at all. We went through this a few years ago, didn't we, with David Beckham? Did we take David Beckham to the World Cup? I can't remember which World Cup we took him to, and he was rubbish. He was kicking everyone, a bit like he did in his first World Cup. But we hold on to the way players were rather than the way they are, I think, sometimes. And it's very romantic and lovely. And maybe the fact that, you know, those, you know, with Beckham and with Rooney, they didn't achieve all of the great things that we hoped they'd achieve. In other words, they lifted the World Cup, which they clearly didn't do. You know, I think it's good to move on. It's good to change. I think they should. I would leave him behind. Sends a big message.
Well, there is those two matches coming up against Turkey and Australia, and I assume it's only after the Australia game that will be when he actually names the squad.
It does look very much like it'll be Turkey, Australia, and you would then think he'll name the squad, and then the squad will assemble and play Portugal.
Yeah, because that's only about a week and a bit before
it starts. Yeah, so that'll be him drawing from the full squad.
Yeah.
So we're going to work on the assumption that, assuming Rooney is fit by that point, that he will be playing against Turkey. Now, you know, who knows? Maybe he will play those, conceivably, six games there. I mean, he'll play those like they're his last, and there'll be a big turnaround. But he's got a lot of miles on the clock now.
Yeah. He has.
I mean, he may still be young, but...
How old is he?
31.
But he's been doing this since he was 14.
And he's been playing professional football since he was 16 in the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's going to take a lot out of a guy.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's no surprise whatsoever that. What I would say in his favour is that he knows how to finish a goal.
Yeah.
He does know where the back of the net is.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could imagine Rooney at some place reinventing himself as a bit of a fox in the box, were it not for the fact that fox in the boxes are a bit passé these days.
Yeah.
He is one player who knows how to take a penalty as well.
Yes, it's...
Oh, don't.
Oh, yeah, oh no. I had to say it, didn't I?
Oh, no.
But, you know, this is what...
Yeah, I know.
This is what makes England like...
it's the horrible reality facing us, isn't it?
It is the horrible, it's the crushing inevitability of the 12-yard kick.
Well, I mean, Eric Dyer didn't learn how to play football in England, so there's a good chance he knows how to take a penalty. obviously that is the end game for England, you suspect, anyway. Well, it's, you know, that wouldn't be too bad.
There's a good point that you raised there, because if you take a young side and you put them under that much pressure in a situation like that, that we are going to end up in, then, you know, you're flipping a coin, really, aren't you? You're not quite sure where that's going
to
end up.
Do they rise to the occasion, or do they buckle under the pressure?
Yeah. But, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose what people would say is that if you take a young team out, you have the benefit of, if it doesn't come off, you say, oh, well, we tried it, it was an experiment, and they've learnt something, so we'll do better next time.
Mm.
But wasn't that what the last World Cup was for?
No, there's no excuses for this one.
Yeah.
The last World Cup was right, okay, you brought a young team,
and
you also assembled the young team unexpectedly. These players suddenly emerged. I'm sure he's probably tracking them, but they did emerge, they broke through, and then Roy Hodgson started to pick them, which is a brave decision. But the backlash was that, unfortunately, we had a bad World Cup. Whether or that was genuinely because of these players, I don't know. There's any number of reasons why you can have a bad tournament, not just the fact that the players weren't up to it. But certainly this team has improved a great deal since the start of the qualifying campaign for this tournament. They've got better, they look good, they're playing well, and they're playing like a proper Roy Hodgson team. And so there are no excuses. Certainly winning is not out of the question, but really, really fanciful. But I mean, England should really look to go deep in Euro 2016, and you know, heads will roll if they get knocked out in the group stage, and Hodgson should just walk. Because he's put together a decent team there, and there are no excuses.
Agreed.
Yeah, and there is really no excuse for going out of the group stage this time.
None whatsoever.
I mean, in the World Cup, it was a tricky group.
Tricky.
It wasn't an impossible group.
No.
It wasn't, certainly wasn't a group we should have finished bottom of.
But Italy and Uruguay was always going to be really tough to get past.
Yeah.
And then Costa Rica.
Who knew?
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there are some wags on the
well, naturally,
on some social media. So
clearly, they haven't been watching the Costa Rican Premier League as I am. Otherwise, they'd have known perfectly well what they were capable of.
Yes, I think anyone who's watching that was probably like just disappearing over the border into Panama to sort out some business dealings.
Yeah.
Yes, we know who you are.
We know, yes, we are.
Now, we can find you somewhere in those 11 million documents. But we will.
Sadly, we're not in any of them. All right, fine. Sadly, I'm not in any of them.
Yeah, but poor old UEFA guy is, though, isn't it?
I know, bald UEFA guy.
Yeah. You mean bald FIFA guy?
Bald FIFA guy, or bald prison guy.
Bald prison guy. I thought he was going to be in there.
Yeah. I know he's not even like taking his shoes off there, is he?
I know. He's barely dry on his contract.
Just getting that name on the door, just square
down.
I suppose he's turned up for work and just said, like, have your references arrived? Oh yes, your references have certainly arrived. Yes. Yeah.
Phone rings. Hello, Signor Infantino. We're coming round on Wednesday to put your name on the car parking space. Oh, great, thank you. Ring, ring. Hello, Signor Infantino. We're coming round on Thursday to remove the name on the car parking space.
Oh, dear. Oh, yeah. Meanwhile, in a back room of FIFA, someone's like working out, right, how do we reset this election machine again? England play Turkey next. That's the next game. That's after the season's over. And then they've got Australia as well. Do you think we're going to learn anything from those two games, though?
Well, they're both handy sides. Australia, a pretty good side, aren't they?
Well, they are Asian champions.
Yeah, we should get a good test from them. And I suppose that if that's the final game before Roy makes his decision, then that's a good tester. So I suppose he'll learn something from that.
Mm.
There'll be a smattering of good European talent in both of those teams, obviously, which is a good preparation for England. But also there's the, although it's not a footballing rivalry, there is the sporting rivalry between England and Australia, which I don't think will be lost on, particularly the Australians. They'll be well up for the game.
Yeah.
So there'll be stiff challenges, possibly quite literally stiff challenges. We're hoping that Mila Jedinak isn't playing, because he might just go around just killing some of the England players.
Yeah.
Because he's capable of it.
If any sport reporter does use the word football ashes, you really do have every right to go and spit in their face. Yeah.
Football ashes. Yeah. The fashes. It's the fascists! The fascists. Copyright Terry DeFellin. 2016.
Hashtag fascists.
Hashtag fascists. Fascist bully boys. And then Portugal, I suspect, probably might be a little bit more of a less intense kind of...
They're not going to be taking any chances.
That one will be proper flip-flops, that one.
Yeah. Because everyone by that point is like, we're all here, so let's just not...
That'll be like watching a game of football played on a minefield. Because everyone will just be tiptoeing everywhere.
And then, of course, the shit gets real.
Actual minefield. Russia.
Well, let's talk about the group Russia, Wales and Slovakia.
Well, Russia's the toughest one to call because most of the Russian team play in Russia, and I don't think hardly anybody who follows the game over here or follows England also closely follows Russia.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many pundits. I mean, obviously England should be sending scouts or getting scouting reports from Russia, from club football in Russia, but pundits and certainly the likes of part-timers like us are not going to know hardly anything about that Russian team. We'll certainly be happy to sit down and try and remember the names, but I've actually seen them play football? No. Mm. And anybody who tells you they have, unless they're actually based in Russia, then there's a good chance that they're not that much better off than we are. So that's a genuine... For us, that's a genuine mystery and a difficult one to call.
Yeah, I just hope that the Russian squad still retains some names that are a bit funny.
Oh, I'm sure there will be.
Zhirkov.
Yeah.
It's so juvenile. It's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Look, if you can't giggle at someone being called Zhirkov, then
there's something wrong with you.
There is something wrong with you, yes. Yes. The sound of football. We're not afraid to laugh at European names.
That's why we're voting in. Oh,
no, we're running out. No, we're running in.
Wales, of course. So we should know something about them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they will do. Yeah, so that's going to be a derby game.
Yes,
it is.
And
international derbies.
Yeah, international derbies, which are curious things, but they do happen. They do exist, and that'll be because it's the second game, it's just such a pivotal fixture for both teams.
Mm. And they will be really, really fired up for
both, in fairness. I mean, yes, all right, yes. Well, a lot of it will be Wales, and a lot of it will be Wales as underdogs.
Yeah.
And saying that Wales will be perhaps hungrier than England, that England might be prepared. But I think England will be just as hungry to beat that, to beat Wales.
I think that will be... I making a prediction right now.
We don't like to make predictions on the sound of football.
I wouldn't be surprised if England and Wales go into that game having both won their first game and will be quite happy just to see that one out with the draw.
And the old Anschluss fixture, eh?
Not a
Germany Austria.
I think they will be quite happy not to be embarrassed in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Rather I think that'd be an extremely cagey affair, and I don't think it's going to be a great spectacle.
Mm.
Well, if it works out that way.
Yeah, if it works out. I just think that Wales will hit the ground running. They'll beat Slovakia and will beat Russia in the first game.
Mm. Okie dokie, then. That's a bold prediction.
It's very bold, considering what the gentleman to my left said about Russia. And they do always have very fit athletes, don't they?
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, what are you talking about?
I see what you did there. I do see what you did there.
I don't know what you mean. That's actually quite funny.
I'll get the candle after all. I'll have plenty of it there. Don't worry. Everyone will know exactly how funny that is. I will flag it up for Chris at the end of your show. Yeah. Just so it's on there at least four or five times.
It has to be. Yeah. I've just peaked. You realise?
Yeah, I know. That's it.
Okay, I want it down. I want it set in stone.
251 episodes in, and that's it. It's all downhill.
Yeah. I would like to announce my retirement forthwith. You can bury me here.
So that leaves us with the Slovakia game. As what finishes the rather what will be a very tedious group stage, because the group stage in this tournament, 24 team tournaments, they are terrible, aren't they?
Yeah, apparently the only way you can actually not, I mean, the thing about it is it's also, yeah, as you say, it's pretty low rent. I mean, I think you have to probably lose all three matches 8-0 in order to not get into the next round. So,
well, you say that. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
there's every chance that that will happen.
England, yeah, if you get 4 points in the group stage, you are about 50-50. Well, you're quite likely to go through if you get just 4 points, and that's a win and a draw in the three games.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. But that's we've discussed that before. I'm sure we'll discuss it again. That's just the way it has to be.
Yes.
Europe is a big place with lots of countries.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is. And half of them are playing in this tournament.
Half of them are playing in this tournament. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's true. I mean, the thing is, it's become massively bloated with having 24 teams there. I don't like it.
No, I know you don't like it. You said you hadn't liked it right from the beginning, and you're sticking with it.
I know.
Yes. I'm a bit more positive about it, but I can totally understand why you don't like the idea of 24 teams.
Best place third teams. It's just rubbish.
The next one's going to be a bit weirder as well, isn't it? Because that's, sorry to skip ahead, but the next European Championship is going to be all over the show because no one's hosting it.
They're playing it all over Europe.
They're playing it all over. I think we've got the final. And when I say we have. I mean England. Yeah. The final's in Wembley.
Yeah.
So you could have a group fixture in Moscow, another one in Reykjavik.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, do you know, we'll go through it one day. We'll do a pod, all that whole thing.
But
I think it's already been determined, or at least certainly the final and semi-finals have been determined, and the final's going to be in England. So you know, good move there for Wembley, but that's going to be weird because without that kind of cultural, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the idea of it being in a single place or in two places gives it. Kind of binds a tournament together.
Yeah, I agree.
It makes it a tournament, doesn't it?
Yeah, really? It's going to be a bit weird. But it's only one tournament. And I'm sure it was basically because it was all being decided right in the middle of the credit crunch and no one had any money and they all couldn't bid to host the tournament anymore. Yes. And that's the other thing about having big tournaments, not the 2014 tournament, is that very few countries can actually host them.
No.
So inevitably it'll be England's turn quite soon because there's very few people left. Mm. Very few countries left.
Well, it showed Canada hosted the Women's World Cup last summer.
Yeah.
The only way they could do it was by having it on pitches, on plastic pitches.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because then they could have
on 3G pitches.
Yes.
Yeah.
3G pitches. So they could have back-to-back games at the same place.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you want to have games at different venues, then you're going to need to have lots and lots of venues.
Maybe that's something that they will go down. They'll go down that route of doing back-to-back fixtures. But, I mean, logistically, that's such a nightmare because, I mean, even the group stages of these tournaments, they sell out. Mm. I mean, back in the day, you're in a men's tournaments, even as recently as 1990, you'd get rarely, you wouldn't get, sold out games every fixture, certainly in the group games.
Mm.
But nowadays, they all turn up. So that turnaround of support, it's just logistically, the security is just not on.
Yeah,
and particularly given the fairly horrendous non-football related stuff that's going on in Europe, in the broader world, it's just from a security point of view, no one's got an appetite for it at all.
Yeah,
yeah. So really, I mean, it does limit the options of where a tournament this size can actually be played. You can only really play it in the traditional homelands of football.
Yeah.
So you can't really spread the game around much.
Yeah, no, I mean, the lack of investment. I mean, you'd like to think that perhaps it would be good if maybe Hungary could take it. You'd think, certainly, they have enough land mass.
Yeah.
They've got enough football history and culture. But do they have the money and the infrastructure to do it?
Probably
I
not.
Don't know, but I would imagine not.
Yeah, you could play it across, you could play it across the kind of the Central European countries, couldn't you? And even
but that's where you get
to Austria. And
that's what we had last time when we had Poland and Ukraine sharing.
Which went down fine.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't the disaster that a lot of people thought it was. And there was a lot of that, I think, was just chauvinism about Eastern Europe, frankly.
Yeah.
But I mean, you would think that probably they'll be looking for a nice, safe choice, one that they know can definitely happen without there being any hiccups or concerns. So you'd think they would look to Germany or England.
Mm. Yeah. Italy. But you're right, with the financial uncertainty, there definitely was a few years ago, and only slightly less now, but across southern Europe, then no one really wanted to say, we'll put on a 2014 tournament.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, Italy were gagging for 2012. They bid for it, and then they were turned down in favour of Poland-Ukraine. And I think at the time people felt that was because Platini, having recently taken the step up, based largely on East European votes, was sort of paying it back to a certain degree, and others speculated that perhaps the Italian sort of controversy around the way that they conduct their business or football was they were being punished for that. I think that's probably a bit hypocritical, but I mean it may well have been true.
But ultimately, it turns out that they couldn't have afforded the stage anyway.
Well, perhaps not. Yeah. No. I mean, I'm sure they would have done it, but. Yeah, I mean, it would have cost a lot of money.
You've done this again, you two, haven't you?
What?
We are having a nice football conversation about the England
about business,
team,
and you're now
talking about money. You're just breadheads, aren't you? You're just talking about money and football administration. And I know you just can't get away from football administration.
Can't stop talking about it.
You can't get away from
so
the money.
Interesting.
I'm gonna crack the whip. I am.
Start talking about football again, shall we?
Start talking about football. Cool. Actually, we're getting very, very close to winding up. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ask each one of you now to name the three players you definitely want to see in the starting lineup.
Oh, that's
for
good.
England. Yeah, I don't want you to go through the whole 11. Just three players who you think, yes, I want to see those people starting. The rest of them we can just fill in the gaps. Yep.
I was going to try and spread it through the
through
the spine of it, but I'm not going to.
I
would like to see Kane. I would like to see Vardy and Ali.
Right. Yeah. Those are your three that you definitely want to see there.
Yeah.
I want to say Barkley, but I don't know. I'm not going to though. I'm going to say Dyer.
Yeah.
Because I think he's probably one of the best midfielders that we have at the moment. I'm going to say Danny Welbeck. And I'm going to choose one from the defence. And I personally going to choose his Stones.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You want to see him starting?
I want to see him starting.
Whoa.
I want to see him.
Yeah, controversial that is.
It is controversial, but I want to see. But I want us to go and be all we can be. And I think that Stones is a cracking player.
He is.
Cracking player.
Mm.
What about you?
I want to see Forster starting goal.
I think you're going to get that wish.
Yeah.
I think you're going to get that way. I think Hart is increasingly becoming yesterday's man.
Yeah.
What has happened to Hart?
Well, he's been dropped.
Yeah, I know he's been dropped.
And also Pep doesn't fancy him, I don't think, because Pep's looking to bring somebody else. I forget who it is off the top of my head, but Pep's looking to bring somebody else in for next season at City.
Wow.
And I want to see Lallana playing as well.
Do you mean...
Let's all go down the strand. Let's all go down the strand. I'll be leader, you can march behind. Come with me and see what we can find. Let's all go down the strand. Oh, what a happy land. That's the place for fun and noise, all among the girls and boys. So let's all go down the strand.
Yes,
of course you do. But he is he's a lovely player, though. Isn't
he? And someone who was actually perhaps losing his way under Rodgers.
Yeah,
and
definitely acquired some focus under Klopp.
Yes, certainly. And really, though, I would be looking at names you've already mentioned. After that, I mean, I really want to see Welbeck starting.
Yeah, he's just so good.
Sturridge as well.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
we are spot for choice up front. Why are we still talking about Rooney?
Why are we talking about Rooney? These guys are so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, there's not even, it's just like, look at it objectively. There's just not even a conversation to be had.
Yeah. Well, listeners, I mean, I'm sure you're probably foaming at the mouth now thinking
yeah, why don't we talk about Jack Wilshere? They'll be saying.
They will be, yeah.
And they'll be right.
They'll
be right.
Yeah. They'll be saying, why aren't you talking about Theo Walcott? And you'd be wrong.
You'd be right. You'd be wrong about that.
Oh, Joel Ward, maybe.
Joel Ward, Fussball Gott. we're wrapping him up in cotton wool for the next season. You had your chance, England, and you blew it.
Yes, and on that insightful point, I think it's time to bring this podcast to a close. So for me, looking forward to the summer, Graeme Sibley. From Jan Dalton and from Terry Fulham, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Good on you for not advocating Lee Cattermole.
He hasn't had a good season this season.
No, he hasn't.
He's not starting now, is he?
He's not. And Vila's in.
No, well, that's probably why Sunderland are in the blue card, isn't it? No Cattermole. No.
Well, I know, but I think he's been shown up a bit by some of the players we've brought in.
Cattermole.
I think.
Hey, I'll tell you what, though, up front, though. Jermaine Defoe, why isn't he being back? Well, why isn't he back in it? Now, there's a player who will be absolutely knackered by the time some comes around.
Yeah.
Playing a relegation dogfight with some.
But he's got 12 goals now, hasn't he? It's creepy. Yeah,
could keep us up.
Damn well. Yeah, and 12, not just goals that, like, you know, you tap in at 3-0 up, are they? So.
No, quality goals.
Yeah.
He scores important goals. Maybe Roy will pick a wild card and it'll be Jermaine Defoe.
Yeah, well, Rooney's not going, but Jermaine Defoe is.
That would be brilliant.
But there is an argument on form to say that Jermaine Defoe should go before Wayne Rooney, right?
Well, you should go on the players that are.
If you're looking at
if you're being objective, if you're really.
Otherwise, take Bobby Charlton. He was good, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was good. He can kick a ball. He hasn't done much for the last, 40 years.
No. And how many stands does Wayne Rooney have named after
him? Exactly.
At the moment, none, but, give it time.